fortune favors the bold. Ancient Roman quote teaches us that if we want to be winners, we must think like winners. Today, everything is in a flux. Nothing is certain anymore, and the world we have learned to know and all the great truths we've been taught to believe in have been challenged. Behind the respectful facade of the system, there is a genuine panic and chaos, and it may well take only a flutter of a butterfly's wings to wreck the system completely. We are living breaking times when things may take a very violent and sudden turn to almost anywhere, and as one thing always leads to another, the final outcome of this chain reaction may well be very surprising indeed. Just imagine how the assassination of Archduke Ferdinand in Sarajevo in 1914 really started the 20th century and where it eventually took Europe and the world. Who could have seen in the summer 1914 how the world would stand in 1992 when the great cycle of the 20th century finally closed with the collapse of communism, Berlin Wall and the breakup of Yugoslavia, all more or less direct results of the First World War. I believe that the coming megatrend will be in our favor. The European nationalists are about to catch a powerful wind in their sails. The constantly growing pressure from immigration, crime, terrorism, and social collapse fueled by the crisis of global capitalism will result in a paradigm shift, a fundamental and irreversible intellectual upheaval that will change the way we see the world and our place in it. Just like in France, just before the Great Revolution, where the mood of the people violently turned against the aristocracy and the clergy. But the question remains, are we ready to be winners? Do we have the appetite for it? Do we have the right attitude for it? One major psychological stumbling block is that if we think like victims and behave like victims, people will see us as victims, weak and helpless. And if we give this impression to people, they will not take us seriously. Therefore, instead of complaining about the injustices of this world, we should already today confidently focus our eyes into the future, into the world we are determined to build, so that our positive vision of the future becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. We are not victims. When the time comes, our enemies will be the victims. The strength of Marxism was that it promised people victory, regardless of how difficult the current situation may have been. For nearly 150 years, the idea that the revolution is predetermined by the material forces in history gave numerous generations great courage to face dangerous enemies and to make tremendous sacrifices, often in extremely difficult circumstances. This deterministic view on history did not make people passive, as one might expect, but cleared any doubts they may have had about the future and actually activated people. Many nationalists, however, seem to think that we have already been defeated, everything is lost, and that our future will be awful. Nationalism is plagued with defeatism and cynicism. It is ironic that so many nationalists are actually expecting our civilization to collapse, but fail to recognize the great potential of the coming crisis. Indeed, terrible things will happen, and so it should be, because eventually everything will work in our favor. We have to learn to understand that the coming national revolution is a direct consequence of the current economic, social, ethnic, and ethnic contradictions, and as such a predetermined phase in the evolution of our civilization. As the economic, social, and ethnic contradictions are only growing in the modern world, our most cunning weapon against the system is to snuff out all hope people may still have. Considering the state of the world is in today, it doesn't take much to shake people's confidence in the system. But instead of being worried, anxious, or desperate about the coming turmoil, we must fearlessly welcome it, we must celebrate it, we must embrace it. We must always make it absolutely clear that the collapse of the Western societies into a raging ethnic tribal war only serves our cause and that it is the necessary prerequisite for the national revolution. Yeah, yeah. Therefore, our primary task is to convince everyone that chaos awaits. We must do everything within our power so that the sense of doom and gloom begins to haunt the society. We must persuade people to believe in the collapse so that this collapse then becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy as well. Our analysis of the current world and the future is correct, while our enemies are blind and cannot see that they are only preparing the requirements for their own downfall. Surely this should give us confidence and strength. The fact that we can see further than others is our advantage. Surely we should also make it known that we have this advantage, that we are wiser, smarter, cleverer, and that we shall conquer in the end. When everyone else is scared and desperate, we are optimistic, because we have seen this coming, and we know where all this will take us in the future. We are strong and confident, and people will desperately cling to us as their only hope, because they realize that we can see far beyond the horizon. While the liberal idealists are losing control and in their desperate plight do not know what is going on and what should be done, we remain cool-headed and rational. We must give the impression that nationalists are a calculating, conspiring and all-seeing think tank of brilliant minds making plans and strategies for the future. Only those who are convinced themselves that they will be successful can also convince others and inspire them to join the struggle. Optimism and success often go hand in hand and can be very contagious. Nothing breeds success like success. It's always better to be overconfident and arrogant rather than desperate and frustrated, because nobody likes those who have lost all hope. The defeated will have no followers. Our most powerful weapon in this struggle is our absolute conviction that eventually we will win. But if you want to win, you have to be there already. You have to behave as if you have already won. Being right means that we are also luckier than others. And indeed, if you really look at it, you will see that everything that happens today serves, in the end, only our cause. Only we have the historical momentum. People need visions. People follow visions. People will even die for visions. The ills of this world do not move masses, no matter how bad things are. Nothing happens until people know what they actually want, until they have a dream to fight for, to kill for, to die for, a direction where to march. The driving force in human history has always been the narrative, the story, the myth. We can see how entire empires have been built upon them. The great religions, which are basically just stories, have nevertheless been foundations for ancient and gigantic civilizations. It is absolutely vital for our movement that we can tell a powerful story as well. Our story has to be about the survival of Europe and about Europeans coming together, putting aside their past grievances and uniting as a family at last. Our story has to involve a struggle against enemies who try to destroy us and take our land. A final battle against multitudes of vile savages. An ocean of grotesque subhumans trying to rape our civilization. Much like howling demons right at the last minute. Our story must also involve a bloody revenge against those traitors who have weakened us, led us astray. Revenge brings catharsis, and without catharsis, our story would be incomplete. Our story has to be about hope lost and hope rekindled, and it has to end in a gigantic victory with a promise of a glorious future. All great epochs in human history can be recognized by their achievements in art, architecture, and aesthetics. We can immediately recognize the style and mood of Renaissance and Baroque. Roman ruins tell us a story just like the massive red brick factories of the Industrial Revolution or modern skyscrapers. The aesthetics is the testimony of spirit of each epoch in history. Therefore, it is imperative that the pan-European movement also creates its own unique style. An inspiring task for us today is to start designing the aesthetics of the pan-European age and the future world. Since pan-European age will be the new high point of our civilization, everything must be designed anew. How our homes, public buildings, villages, towns, cities, bridges, factories, artworks, clothing, and simple everyday objects look like. Everything must reflect the distinct style of the great pan-European age. something that can be recognized hundreds and even thousands of years from now. Pan-European age will be the next Renaissance and Enlightenment. It will be considered as the new classical age since the Roman Empire, and just like the Roman Empire, it will set the standards for art, architecture and aesthetics for thousands of years to come. This is a great intellectual and artistic task of utmost importance, for aesthetics not only reflect the character of the new society, but also strengthen it. Aesthetics, as manifested in the constructed physical environment, subliminally guide us to understand the current zeitgeist and the great truths of the age. We should consider ourselves lucky for having this extraordinary opportunity to lay the artistic and intellectual foundations for an entirely new era in human history. Yeah. If our message is aesthetically inspiring enough, people will also accept our vision of the future and start wanting it more than anything else. We will create the world of tomorrow, the 21st century European fashion, design, art, architecture and lifestyle already today in people's minds. The worst mistake would be, though, if we allow the nationalist movement to regress into a mere retro movement. If we try to face the future with our eyes fixed into the past, recycle kitsch and worn-out obsolete imagery, and react to the challenges of the modern world by escaping into nostalgia. If at this critical juncture in our history, it turns out that European nationalism is, after all, only reactionary, unimaginative provincialism, then all hope is definitely lost. Yeah. Therefore, our paramount task is to prove that the European nationalist movement is not regression, but an entirely new kind of streamlined and progressive modernist movement. The decisive weapons that settled the battle over cultural and spiritual hegemony in the society are creativity, the ability to dream, and the ability to tell a powerful story. It is vital that we possess them and use them. In order to win, our movement has to be about love, life, and sex. The youth revolution of the 1960s was energized primarily by sex. Politics, music, and drugs were only secondary. The greatest high came from open collective sexuality. Nothing brings young people together in such massive numbers as sex. The entertainment and the advertising business know this fully well. Young people have always been willing to go great lengths only to be able to meet other young people and to bond sexually. It is a tragic loss if the nationalist movement is perceived as a stifling asexual movement. If the worst thing is if we start preaching young people old biblical and Victorian virtues and give the impression that our movement is stuck in the 19th century. The desert religions, Christianity, Islam and Judaism are rife with bizarre sexual obsessions. Therefore, we must not let the books of Moses distort the bright souls of our young people with intellectual garbage which is hostile and damaging to their emotions and completely alien to love and life. We must not let outdated middle-class puritanism turn our movement barren and sterile. We must make every young person in the movement feel that they are physically and socially appealing. We must make every young person in the movement feel that they are beautiful, brave and strong. We must make every young person in the movement feel that they have something to give, that they are respected and needed. The National Revolution must be a great adventure for our young people, an opportunity to do heroic deeds for the community. National Revolution is about life, the life of the national community, and about protecting that life and defending its living space. This is something you don't find in dull books and tedious theories. It is coded in our genetic makeup, it lies in our instincts. No wonder the parasitical and perverted left cannot realize it. National Revolution must be the second sexual revolution, or otherwise it will die away. Every young person in the nationalist movement must have the opportunity to love and be loved, regardless of their sexual orientation. All we demand is that you love your people more than you love yourself, and that you hate the enemies of your people more than anything else. National Revolution must be the revolution of style. The new European nationalism has to be provocative, sexy, sharp and avant-garde. It has to be something completely new so that it will take leftist old farts by surprise and steal the message from our primitive past. The new European nationalism must be a dangerous and arousing call of the wild in a modern man who doesn't want to be tamed and is about to break his shackles. Modern European nationalism will be the most seductive way for young Europeans to fight the system and claim their place in the world. Modern European nationalism will also be the most radical way to challenge the emotionally impotent liberalism and the perverted pseudo-intellectual leftism. The more stylish, decadent and ferocious European nationalism appears, the more irresistible it becomes in the eyes of young Europeans. An entire generation will be intoxicated by danger, duty, discipline and destiny. We may be idealists, but when it comes to political struggle, fighting over the hearts and minds of our people, we have to put ideals aside and be ruthless, rational and straightforward in our approach. The worst mistake would be to think that our lofty message also requires us to use more dignified, academic or maybe intellectual and even moral methods of communicating it to the people. However, political propaganda is about selling ideas, and selling ideas is always the same, regardless whether it's about revolutionary ideology or breakfast cereals. If we wish to succeed, we must start seeing nationalism as a product that can be put into an alluring package, transformed into a hot brand and sold to the masses. It is clear that Europe will survive only if European people start fighting for their place in this world and start showing genuine pride and self-confidence. We have to start teaching young Europeans to love themselves again. We must make them understand that white is beautiful and that being European means being attractive, smart, edgy and adventurous. In the end, it is all about the attitude. Europe will survive only if the future generations of Europeans learn how to be arrogant and stylish, violent and controlled, ruthless and dazzling in their dealings with outsiders. Our young people will make outsiders shrink. Non-Europeans will immediately sense the danger and the reckless warrior spirit in our young people. Non-Europeans will intuitively understand that Europeans are not to be toyed with anymore, the wolf pack has gathered and the mortal threat is present. The age of guilt is over. We will not apologize for our achievements. Our history cannot be used as a weapon against us. No one can say they have legitimate claims on us. We are in debt to no one. Our glorious past is a matter of pride and joy to us. Whatever we have done in the past only inspire us today for even greater deeds tomorrow. Those who feel that we have wronged them should be happy they are still alive. We will teach the young Europeans to defend themselves against those who try to deny their right to exist, who try to poison their spirit with guilt and self-hatred. We will make our young people immune to humility. We will teach our young people to face their enemies, to expose their malicious lies, to recognize their methods, and to understand their hidden agenda. We will teach our young people to fight back, first by using their brains and wits, and then we will teach them to fight back with fists, bayonets, rifle butts, guns and tanks. This is war, and our greatest enemy is the enemy within. The submissive, apologetic... The moment we manage to destroy the enemy within, destroying the rest of our enemies will be a walk in the park. We have to overcome ourselves before we can overcome the world. Even war itself is an aesthetic undertaking to us. We will celebrate the beauty of destruction and the glory of carnage. War is the sublime test of our skills, the great school, and the climax of our cultural evolution. All these quiet years of dull peace, mind-numbing and suffocating stillness will soon explode into rash action, reckless exploits, and death-defying courage. The fever of war will energize the hearts and minds of Europeans. Once again, life is at its barest, nature red in tooth and claw. This is Europe's answer. Those who wanted to undo us will face a total and uncompromising war of destruction. This glorious war is the answer to all our needs. This war, the great Redeemer, shall set us free. The shabby parasitical left will have no hold on a generation which is filled with elan and is eagerly waiting for a chance to step on the fields of glory, to storm enemy positions, to hunt down its foes and to eradicate all resistance. Peace today in Europe is only the quiet moment just before the battle. The fever is rising and it will not break until we let blood. The liberals and leftists thought they had already rendered us harmless, castrated our spirit, amputated our will, and corrupted our courage. And just as they prepare to deliver the final blow, the hell breaks loose. How could the spineless pacifists and foolish idealists ever understand the call of the wild in our young people? How could the bloodless bookworms recognize the awakening of the wolfpack instinct? How could the poisonous self-haters ever appreciate the urge to kill and die for one's own people? The left has grown twisted and the liberals are anemic and lifeless. In the end, they cannot seize the hearts and minds of the people, but with us, whatever we do or say, life and death will always be present. With style and daring, the next generation of Europeans steps forth, fully aware that the meaning of life is to kill enemies. These young princes, the prime of Europe, understand that they must shed blood or be deprived of their inheritance, for the meek shall not inherit the earth, but the ruthless and glorious. Dirty, greedy hands are about to steal their kingdom, but soon those hands will be mercilessly cut off. In this cataclysmic struggle, our young people will become death, the destroyer of worlds, and if it's their destiny to commit ultimate crimes so that Europe could live forever, then we must see it as their ultimate sacrifice. Feeling no remorse, shame, guilt or fear, the best generation of Europeans will soon start their march into greatness, and through their pain and struggle and sacrifice, Europe will be saved.